Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
I believe united we stand, and we have common ground to find, and we're going to find it. We're not even going to be
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind for a very, very busy week in the Capitol. But first, wish I was there. The governor says he's so grateful to be the 46th governor in his State of the State speech. But Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald said $600 million for special ed. Where's that going to come from? Speaker Voss said by linking medical marijuana and recreational marijuana, it's a setback for those who want medical marijuana. Debate on the assembly floor over pre-existing conditions. And finally, three students give a rousing rendition of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. Wish I was there.
I'm incredibly honored to be here tonight as the 46th governor of the great state of Wisconsin to say this. The state of our state is that we have work to do, and we're ready for bipartisan solutions.
I was a little disappointed, I think, in that, you know, first of all, you spent a lot of money, and money, and I don't even know where the revenue is coming from for some of these proposals. Just the $600 million for special ed, kind of, I took a step back, like, is that the right figure? Is he using the right figure?
What Governor Evers did last week was incredibly counterproductive. The fact that he started out saying he's open to legalization of medical marijuana, and literally in the same day slid down the slope to say he would support full legalization is exactly what many of us are afraid of. So I hope he has not poisoned the conversation through his own inexperience, but perhaps he has.
If the ACA is repealed, you are going to leave certain people in this state without certain coverages. There's no denying it. If you really want to protect the people in the state of Wisconsin, you're going to pull out of the lawsuit against the ACA.
I have a pre-existing condition myself. What would I be paying out of pocket if I had to pay sticker price for my condition? So I ran a few numbers. I'm well over $1,600 a month. If I ever lose my coverage, the coverage I'm so fortunate to have, how am I going to afford that?
Now, I understand that both sides at one time or another had used lame duck sessions. And all I'm doing is asking that we have a truce, nuclear arms deal, that you guys aren't going to go nuclear, or whoever's in the majority in the future, that if there's a lame duck session and there's a reason for it, that you'd need a two-thirds vote to vote for bills, resolutions, or appointments.
We need a new concept of our criminal justice system. It's punitive. When are we going to move towards transformation? The first 90 days of their life is so critical after being released from prison, because that is the quickest time frame in which they will be sent back to prison. So we have to work at the reentry aspect, but we need to work on rehabilitation. And I think we've not done a good job. And to incarcerate African-American men 8.8 times quicker in Dane County than white counterparts tells me that our system is not fair. It's not equal, and it's not just.
This year, the anniversary of the Citizens United decision fell yesterday on the same day as Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And Martin Luther King understood that corporations weren't people and didn't deserve the rights of people. Property is not man, he said.
And so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream.
It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
We've heard the Republicans, Governor Walker and the Republican leaders, saying our economy is on a hot streak, 3% unemployment. But Governor Evers in his State of the State says there's another side to it. So just quickly, the opportunity we have is not just the number of jobs we create, the number of workers who will work 40 hours each week and still won't make enough to keep their family out of poverty. Second point, JR, strength of our success is not found in fiscal surplus. It's defined by the number of kids who will go to school hungry tomorrow. Your thoughts on him seeing the other side of our economic boom or not boom, unboom?
Well, this is interesting. It's part of the transition from Governor Walker to Governor Evers, and Republicans are having a hard time with this. You can tell because they were kind of perplexed. Like, well, what do you mean the economy needs to be fixed? Like, it's going great. They're talking about unemployment 11 months in a row, less than 3%, the $8 billion in tax cuts over the 8 years of Walker's in office, the thousands of jobs available right now.
In fact, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, just to, on that same theme, Fitz said, I'm not sure what he's talking about. The economy is stronger now than it's been in the 24 years that I've been there. Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, go ahead.
And what's going on is Republicans, I heard this week, say, well, he didn't talk about our issues. He didn't talk about rural Wisconsin in the speech. He didn't talk about recruiting workers, which we need more talent. This is a missed opportunity. The counter from Democrats was, well, guys, he's not your governor now. It's our governor, Democrats, saying this. Right. They're going to talk about our issues. Issues like people work 40 hours a week and can't make ends meet. People who, yes, the unemployment rate is low, but they're still not getting ahead. It's a different view of the economy. And what for Evers, and we've talked about this a little bit, you have to do that transition from, like, candidate Evers to Governor Evers, where now you own everything. So, yes, even though some of the stuff is, a lot of the stuff is from 8 years of Walker and Republicans, you own the view of the state. So people kind of start putting it on you. You're the governor, leader. Right. So you've got to find a way to cheerlead the good things while also drive your message of what you want to fix. Now, you know, the caveat to that is that Dems are quick to point out that Scott Walker spent 8 years blaming Jim Doyle for various things or bringing up Jim Doyle as a problem. I mean, even in the campaign last fall, Governor Walker compared, look at now versus Jim Doyle, like that. Those two words never left Scott Walker's vocabulary. But there is this kind of transition going on of like a new dynamic in the Capitol of it's a Democratic governor. He's going to talk about Democratic priorities.
Right. And this is a good time to listen to just about a minute of Governor Evers talking about the other side of the economy and a response from Senator Alberta Darling, co-chair of the Finance Committee. So let's listen to them.
The opportunity we have to offer is not just the number of jobs we create. It's counted, too. It's counted, too, by the number of workers who will work 40 hours each week just to keep their family out of poverty. The strength of our success is not found solely in fiscal surplus. It's defined, too, by the number of our kids that will go to school hungry tomorrow.
He didn't give the past administration a lot of credit for the growth that we've had, but if you look at our results, people are saying we had the most manufacturing jobs in the nation in the last several months, and he hasn't talked about that. So why would we want to cut the manufacturing and ag tax credit, which is not for wealthy people, it's for farmers who are going to be hard-pressed in the next budget, and for small business people who really are the heart of our economy. So we're not going to take away that tax credit. So how is going to pay for the middle-class tax credit cut is an issue. We support it, and we're paying for it. We're paying for it with the surplus we have, the $300 million.
Second topic, I'm calling it confusion.
Yes.
Over the Affordable Care lawsuit. Tuesday, in the State of the State, the governor said, I am directing Attorney General Call to withdraw from a lawsuit that would gut coverage for the 2.4 million Wisconsinites who have pre-existing conditions. And you and I, when we read that text, we circled that. That's the lead. That's a big news story. Mm-hmm. But step two, then, you and the Associated Press used the term, it was walked back. How?
Oh, yes. Well, we got the letter that Tony Evers had been promising for a couple of weeks and sent to Josh Call, and the letter said he was withdrawing the authority for the lawsuit. Now, that doesn't seem like much to the average person, but there's a key legal distinction. Under the law that was changed by Republicans in the lame duck session in December, the governor can no longer direct the AG to pull out a lawsuit. That authority rests with the Joint Finance Committee, not the governor. So the effect of Evers' letter is not much, and that's what Josh Call basically acknowledged in a letter that he sent back to Evers, saying that his interpretation of state law is that only Joint Finance can give him the permission to plow the lawsuit.
And that was reaffirmed by a legal opinion from the
Reference Bureau. Right.
Ledge Counsel.
Yes.
The lawyers who advise lawmakers.
And here's the thing. This was really interesting to me this week. Just it seemed like a gaffe, you know, like just the stumble. Robin Voss, some speaker called that amateur hour, the way this was handled. And I asked people about this, and they said, JR, if you go a block off the Capitol, nobody paying attention to this. Mm-hmm. The average voter is not keyed in. I mean, this was like a lead of our email product 3 days in a row in the afternoon, right, this whole issue. Most folks are not paying attention to this. They saw Eversley once pull out of the lawsuit to protect, because that's a threat to those who have pre-existing conditions, because those protections are there. That's what they saw, if they saw anything, because quite frankly, the state of the state is not like, you know, primetime viewing for a lot of people in Wisconsin or any other state, right? Yeah. So what did they really see? What are they paying attention to? So this is a part of a messaging discipline problem that Evers has to fix, but it isn't really a fatal error early on in his
administration. And just to piggyback on that, the Charles Franklin poll released yesterday, should the state withdraw from the ACA lawsuit? 48% yes, 42% no, with a margin of error 3.9.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty close call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. But then, to end the week, Attorney General Call then did formally send a letter to the Joint Finance Committee that says, could you meet, quote, promptly, close quote, to vote on my request to withdraw from the lawsuit challenging the ACA. Meanwhile, the Assembly passes a bill on pre-existing conditions. So where does it all stand now?
Well, the interesting thing about that bill is the two questions I've heard this week are, would Evers veto it? And two, will he even get the chance? And let's do the second question first. It passed the Assembly, which the Assembly passed its own version last session. The Senate, however, did not approve the Assembly version of the bill last time. It was an 1815 Republican majority.
Right.
Now it's 1914. They fell one vote short, so they have an extra vote compared to last time.
But the vote in the Assembly this week, 76-19, excuse me.
Here's the issue, though. The Assembly took the bill that they had last time and added an Evers request.
Yes.
That request is to bar lifetime and annual caps on coverage.
Yes.
That, however, makes it probably more difficult to pass that bill in the Senate, because the people who opposed or had issue with in the Republican caucus, the last version, aren't going to be happier with this one. Now, those more conservative members might go, well, not so sure about this one. So there's a big question if that will get to that Senate right now. So we have to pay attention to that first. Scott Fitzgerald, your leader, said he had not had time, had not caucused with the members yet to know where they were at, did not know if he had the votes. If you know Fitz and his style, he will never tell you I had the votes or not until his caucus has had time to look at an issue, stew on it for a while, and say, okay, here's where we are.
He waits for his members to coalesce on an issue.
Yes. So the fact you say we don't know about the votes, maybe not a big deal yet, but I talk to people who see issues with this version of the bill that might make it more difficult in that Senate Republican caucus this session to deal with this bill. Now, if they pass it, then what does Evers do? Because Evers, from what I understand, made it several requests. One thing he wanted was some guaranteed coverage, such as childbirth, something like that. Well, here's the thing. That wasn't put in the bill. Evers focused on that, mm-hmm. and after the bill passed, so was he queuing up a reason to veto it? Mm-hmm. But if he vetoes it, then what? Okay, right. Does he kind of bring the issue back to being it's on him now because he vetoed the bill? Is it better to have some protections, not all the ones that he wants? How does that dynamic play out? And that could be something of a challenge.
Two unresolved questions. Wisconsin role going forth in the ACA lawsuit, mm-hmm. in Texas. Number two, will the state Senate consider and pass the Assembly passed bill?
Yeah, and then what does Evers do with it?
Okay, new subject. The governor announced that he has given his new Secretary of Transportation, Craig Thompson, until he introduces his budget, which right now it could be February 28th, mm-hmm. Thursday, February 26th.
That's the deadline right now, yes.
Right. So it gives the Secretary of Transportation about 5 weeks to come up with a plan. That's a really tough job. And the governor said he wants Mr. Thompson to deal with a task force of stakeholders to develop a plan, and the task force will solicit feedback from key partners from all regions, all sectors of the economy. So Craig Thompson has got to be one of the busiest cabinet secretaries right now, meeting with all these special interest groups and taking some potential options to legislators, and we can talk later about what Mr. Franklin's poll said about the gas tax. Go ahead.
You know, all he has to do is dust off the numerous Blue Ribbon Commission studies on transportation funding.
Yeah.
The various proposals, some of the Republicans had a proposal out last budget. We've seen study after study after study. They know the options. It's what's politically feasible in this environment and which choice do you want to take. You hinted at the Marquette poll. People don't want to see the gas tax raised or the registration fee raised.
Right.
So then what do you do? How do you address that issue without doing that?
I want to come back to something I think Governor Walker even introduced or talked about at one time. And Representative John Spiros out of central Wisconsin says, let's take sales tax receipts from automotives, mm-hmm. from cars, car repairs, and divert it to the transportation fund. I don't know if that's out there, but it has been out there in the past.
But what happens is you take that, that's the general purpose revenue right now. If you take that GPR out of that pot. It's not. It's less dollars for roads, or sorry, for schools, for Medicaid, for state operations, for university support. I mean, that's the rub. Yes, that is definitely an option, but it comes with a price tag, and that's the thing with all these options. There's a price tag to it. Now, Evers said he doesn't want to borrow. Continue borrowing the way we have. We're up to 21, 22 cents out of every dollar.
22 cents out of every dollar goes to debt service.
Just to pay off debt. Just to pay off debt. So if you're not going to borrow more and people want you to raise taxes, what do? Cut projects. You cut projects, people get unhappy. I mean, if you're not going to have more revenues, there are a lot of unattractive options out there. And raising revenues could get you in trouble with voters.
Right. Meanwhile, Mr. Thompson, who has not yet been confirmed, and a couple Republican senators have expressed concerns about him, he's out there trying to stitch together this. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next topic, JR. I think the governor raised what I think is one of the biggest issues to come in Wisconsin, where when he proclaimed the year of clean drinking water, he said some stats that new to me. 1.7 million residents depend on private wells for water. That includes me and my family. 47% do not meet acceptable health standards. Well, I had our well tested last year. U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, 176 water lines lined with lead, and the Pew Charitable Trust estimate for every dollar spent on replacing lead water lines, that we'll see 133% return in higher career earnings and better health. We have had water contamination problems in southwest Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. That's the latest, and now Kewaunee County, extensive. So he has elevated what I think is a major issue that this state has to deal with in the future pretty soon.
Don't forget, after that study came out of southwestern Wisconsin and the contamination there, Speaker Robin Voss, responding to requests from members, talked about having a special committee formed to look at the issue.
Task force, yes.
We have southwestern Wisconsin. We have northeastern Wisconsin. There were ads run in various races, including the governor's race, about pollution in water. There's one ad I remember from environmentalists about manure even being in water. You have the water issue in central Wisconsin when it comes to aquifers and
the central sands area.
So this is a big issue. What they're going to do about it, we'll see. And the other thing is, remember, Republicans did put forward a step to try and replace some lead laterals
yes.
in this last session.
To begin.
But there were some people who felt like they didn't go far enough. I mean, it's a lot of money to find. How do you pay for it?
Didn't his speech say something like $3 billion, or is that?
$2 billion, I thought
$2 billion. Okay, thank you. Meanwhile, Wisconsin Democracy Campaign took something that your shop did and looked at the whole picture. If you look at all spending by candidates for governor and lieutenant governor mm-hmm. and the third-party special interest groups, $93 million, a 14% increase since 2014. And let's just break it down, $57.7 million by Republican candidates and special interest groups that wanted to elect them, $35.3 million by Democratic candidates and special interest groups they favored, and if you just look at Walker and Clayfish, $36.2 million, and if you look at Evers and Barnes, $10.8 million. But I looked up something. $93 million is a record for Wisconsin, but USA Today reported on November 2nd. You want to guess how much money had been spent on the Illinois governor's race as of November 2nd, J.R.?
With two billionaires running? Not even try.
$284 million. Mm-hmm. So Are we pikers in Wisconsin compared to our southern neighbors?
A couple things to remember. One, there's a 2015 rewrite of campaign finance laws by Republicans that allowed unlimited contributions to political parties and legislative caucuses. Those parties can also make unlimited donations to candidates. Scott Walker benefited. I mean, just in the last month of the race, he got three different transfers from the GOP, state GOP, of $1 million+.
Yeah.
So some of these numbers, if you look at that, it pumps up the numbers spent because you had, you know, the state GOP spent it by giving it to Walker, then Walker spent it on whatever. But still, it shows you that the cost is going up. And the interesting thing was the people who spent the most didn't win. That's kind of a unique thing sometimes in these races.
That's right. And I want to go back to numbers that we couldn't use last week that you compiled. The Attorney General, Democrat Josh Call, outspent the incumbent Republican Brad Schimmel, mm-hmm. I think by about 300,000, right?
In last year, yeah. Now, if you add in like everything else, I can't remember what the total spending was, but that race really was overshadowed by the governor's race, and the impression I've got from people is that what happened at the top of the ticket probably influenced that race quite a bit.
Right. Okay, now let's turn to the first Marquette University Law School Poll of the Year, Charles Franklin, yesterday. Mm-hmm. You and I could talk for hours about all the numbers in that, but let's just summarize three. Mr. Trump's approval rating, 54% do not approve, 44% approve. Let's stop there. That's about where Mr. Trump had been over the last 2 years, isn't it?
He got to 50-47 among registered voters, and stress registered, right before the November election. So it's a little bit worse than where he was before. Now, this is taken during the middle of the shutdown, so is that influencing things? You know, we'll see. The question that frankly kind of raises, does he bounce back somewhat after this?
Yeah. Now let's talk about the wall. 51% of those registered voters polled do not approve of the wall. 44% approve. Only 5% no opinion, didn't answer. You surprised at that?
No, it's actually better than what it was in March of 17. They first asked it. So it's gotten marginally better, but still upside down.
Right. But when it comes to who do Wisconsinites blame for the shutdown, do you remember that?
Who are they find responsible? So Franklin made sure to ask responsible.
Thank you.
Is Orlin Trump. You know, he owns a shutdown pretty much.
Okay, and then finally, let's look at very early, since this poll was conducted January 16th through 20, Governor Evers' approval rating, 41% thumbs up, 24% thumbs down. But the key is 28% don't know enough, haven't heard enough about our governor.
So what Franklin said was that that's not uncommon for a first-term governor.
Yeah.
Scott Walker was unique among all governors in that he had almost universal name ID 2 months into his term because he put out Act 10. Once Act 10 came out, he became not just a state figure, but a national figure. So we looked at Marquette polls for 8 years where Walker was like constantly in the mid to upper 40s on both sides of like approval, disapproval, sometimes low 50s, lows. Evers is like a normal first-term governor. People aren't sure about him yet. It's also taken a week and a half into his term.
Nine days after he took the office.
What he had time to do yet.
Yeah.
What's been interesting to watch is how does it grow? Do people get to know him and feel better about him? And these little missteps, like the thing with the ACA lawsuit, that's symbolic of this message discipline thing we've talked about with Evers. At some point, that'll bite him in the butt if he doesn't like fix it. And it, so you got to watch the public. How do they start to see these things? Do they fix, clean that stuff up? Every administration I've covered has growing pains, every single one of them. Scott Walker was not a great speaker in his first day of the state address. Neither was Jim Doyle, you know. It's the first time you're having a statewide audience on a speech where every word scrutinized. That said, how does Evers grow into the job over the next couple, you know, few months? And oh, by the way, Jim Doyle had planned to be governor for how many years? Scott Walker had planned to be governor for how many years? Tony Evers, when he won re-election in 2017 as DPI superintendent, people I talked to don't think he was thinking, okay, I'm running for governor now. So
he sat in that chair and told me, no, I don't plan to run for governor.
Totally different dynamic for him than what Doyle and Walker saw. I mean, Tommy Thompson, he had, you know, been in the legislature for how long before he ran for governor in 86? Right. You know, a different dynamic with this
okay,
guy.
I'm going to land on one more thing about the Charles Franklin poll. Asked whether Governor Walker should run again for governor of U.S. Senate. Yes, in the 30s, no more than 50. Let's end the Franklin segment on that note.
Watch if that number, where is that number at in another year?
Okay.
Another 2 years, another 3 years. That's what I want to know.
Okay, it happened a week ago, but it's significant. Foxconn said it missed its target to get the first round of tax breaks. It created 178 full-time jobs, 82 short of, it would have gotten up to $9.5 million in tax breaks, but the company says it, in 2018, invested $200 million more in the state. 95% of those contracts went to Wisconsin companies. 854 construction workers are at work on that major, huge complex in Racine County, just east of the interstate. And it said this, we remain committed to creating 13,000 jobs in Wisconsin and have adjusted our recruiting and hiring timeline. Governor Evers now owns Foxconn, and like it or not, so it's kind of his problem, these issues and how they play out.
Well, the counter to that is that, you know, Scott Walker blamed Jim Doyle for how long about various things. So, you know, new governors tend to blame the guy before him for problems if they can pull it off. The thing to know about this with Foxconn is the 82 jobs short was the minimum to get tax credits. The target was 1,040 jobs.
Thanks.
Those tax credits are based on salary. So the 9.5 is the cap. I mean, yeah, if you paid 300 people X number of dollars, and you could have gotten that much. But the target's 1,040. They can still get those credits if in the next year they go to 2,080, which is the next target. There's a way to, you know, get there and recoup some of these credits. That said, Foxconn has a problem not just in Wisconsin but globally. Remember, their supplier for Apple. Mm-hmm. Apple's warned that there is a slowdown of expectations for sales, in part because of them in China. I've seen other stories about Foxconn internationally, what's going on with them. It's more fodder for Democrats to say, look, I told you so. Yeah. This place has made all these promises to all these places and fallen short. It's happening again. For Republicans, they're trying, but I'm not sure if they've really done a good job so far of saying, look, this proves what we were saying all along, that if you they don't hit the job numbers, they don't get tax dollars. So this is a good show of the protections they put in place. The Democrats point out, yeah, but they still get 94th North South expanded. They still get roads around that site expanded. They still get utility rate payers paying for a high voltage utility line in there. There's all kinds of other
diversion
things.
Diversion of Lake Michigan Water, things like that.
Other things happening no matter what. Okay. But yes, Republicans are trying to make this point of, here you go, they didn't hit the job numbers, they don't hit the tax dollars.
Okay, time's slipping away. Stock picks rising.
So Evers, again, this whole thing with the AC lawsuit was definitely a fumble. I mean, people on both sides tell me that this was not his best moment. That said, look at the speech as a moment in the sun for him. It is for every governor where they are like front and center. It's their agenda. And then the Marquette poll shows his agenda resonates with voters. They're here with him on Medicaid expansion, right?
62% to 25, yeah.
They're with him on Franklin asked about a major investment in special education.
73% yes, 20% no.
The Evers major investment is $600 million. So they like what he's talking about. However, he's still got to get that message discipline down, okay? That's an issue for him. And with the numbers that he has, I mean, Franklin said being plus 17 is a great place to start. But do these little missteps add up after a while and cause him problems? It's something to watch with him.
One other thing. Is the governor trying to cooperate in a bipartisan way with the legislature? Respondents, 47% yes, 25% no. Okay, mixed.
So, registering lawsuit. This is the lawsuit over Wisconsin's lines. The Supreme Court kicked it back to the three-judge panel in Wisconsin to say, you need to kind of do some more work on this thing because of standing. They're ready to go to trial, but they put it on hold. The trial's on delayed because there are two cases before the Supreme Court this year about congressional lines in, I believe, Maryland and one of the states I'm forgetting about, North Carolina.
That is.
Okay? One Republican-drawn map, one Democratic-drawn map. The court, the three-judge panel here said, look, we're going to wait and see what happens with those because the standards they set could go a long way to deciding what happens here. And the bottom line is this. The Supreme Court has never before ruled that a partisan gerrymander can be so partisan that it's unconstitutional. The court could finally decide that question in these two cases out of those two states. If the court says yes, you can cross a line, then Wisconsin's lines probably are in trouble. If the court says no, you cannot, right, then this Wisconsin case is going to go away.
Right.
That's the bottom line, and we're waiting for cues from the Supreme Court. So, but the court here said, okay, this trial is delayed, at least until July they're looking at. But in the meantime, we can still do discovery and keep things rolling, so once we get a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court, we can get right back at it quickly. I don't know, though, from what I've read in these filings, even best case scenario, if the court rules in favor of the Democrats challenging lines, could they get new lines in place for 2020? That could be a tough task.
Tough task. Okay. Falling.
So union rules, every year we get new
union memberships?
We get new numbers from the Bureau of Labor Statistics about union membership, all right? In 2018, there's a drop of 11,000, Sue, to 219,000. That wiped out the small gain they saw in 2017. Look, the number of people in Wisconsin, represented by unions, had been dropping even before Scott Walker took office. We were at 396,000 in 2008, 355,000 in 2010, but the trend accelerated because of Act 10 and Right to Work. Act 10 got pushed through. There was a little bit of a rally for a while. They started dropping back down. The bottom drops out 2015. We were at 306,000 in 2014. They pushed through Right to Work. It drops to 223,000 in 1 year. The total tally now from 2010, before Walker took office, till 2018 when he left, there are 136,000 fewer workers in Wisconsin.
136,000.
Represented by a union than there were before he took office. Okay. It shows you the movement away from organized labor over the Walker term.
That's a good call. I'm going to take just a minute, JR. Let's look ahead to next week. It's not a busy week in the Capitol. The governor and his staff working on the budget. Do you think Joint Finance could take up Josh Call's letter asking, and if so, what could happen? Is it as clear as the Republicans vote, no, we're not going to let you, and the Dems vote yes? Or, given the fact that some of the Republicans on Joint Finance are going to be up, are they going to have heartburn vote?
I don't know, but Voss and Fitzgerald seem not really that interested in trying to pull back out of that lawsuit, so we'll see.
That's very interesting. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 25.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.